What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys so much for tuning in again this week. We have my very good friend and confidant, Greaves, on the show, and it was fun. I'll tell you about the story of that in just a little bit. First things first, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, base with two S's. New pompadour, it's standing high. Looking at it, it's very high and tight. It's kind of teasing him a little bit about it, but it's growing on me already. I'm feeling it. He's experimenting, and that's all you can ask for. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. I know we've been saying this forever, but goddamn it, we're so close to breaking 1,000. It's just lingering right there, and we can't get past it. I need to tweet more on that account. I feel like I always say, oh, just follow us. I don't tweet that much. I'm saying, like, I'm going to start putting some motherfucking good tweets on that shit. I'm going to stop saving them for my It's Intuition account, and I'll put them on That's Kinda Neat. Go to youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you can watch the video that Mark and I did last week called Weight Is Gone. You can see Herbal Tea. You can see the old classics like Kitty and Wax and Parker and Kyle. Kyle's girls, crazy growth. It's growing so much. It's now the third highest. It's actually, at the time of this podcast, probably the second highest video, and it might end up being the number one. So shout out to Kyle, killing it out there. We didn't have a performance with Greaves this week, and I'm going to get into that. It's because we caught him in the 2-hour window that he had in Los Angeles where he's not performing, because I've been bugging Ben to get on the show forever because I love his story. After touring with him for a couple weeks in 2012, I learned all this shit about him that I had never really knew, even though we'd done a podcast in the past. It was kind of a different style of podcast that I was doing back then, that was a little more surface level. And after getting to know him, he has this amazing story and just has taken advantage of a lot of great opportunities that were presented to him, and I thought it was really interesting. So I've been wanting to get him on the podcast forever. Thankfully, I'm pretty good friends with his tour manager, and so we were able to kind of work it out. But we didn't have time to get a performance with the full band, but also in order to get it at the studio, I would have had to pick him up at the Roxy, drive him back to Cosmic Zoo, then drive him back to the Roxy in time for sound check. And it was all seeming kind of crazy when fate kind of kicked in. And this morning I woke up and I had all this shit to do because tomorrow I leave for Cleveland for a photo shoot. And so I had all this shit to do because yesterday I forced myself to take a day off. So I've been sitting in my house for the last 2 weeks, pretty much not going anywhere except for the post office and the gym. My house has essentially become a warehouse where I've just been shipping. And so every morning I wake up, I fill out all the new orders, I pack them all, I take them to the post office, I come back. Thankfully, the post office is next door to me. Go to the gym, come home, and do some interneting and keep trying to promote and push the record. So yesterday, my friend Dom, who I always talk about, who I am actually going to Cleveland with as well, was like, yo, man, I'm letting the kids skip school tomorrow. We're going to the beach because it's going to be 90 degrees. You should come down. That's a fucking hour and a half drive. But I was like, you know what? I owe this to myself. I should take a little fucking vacation day. So I drove down to Oceanside, went to the beach. My back got sunburnt as shit. I drove home last night in preparation of having to pick up gear for the photo shoot, do this podcast, go to the gym, et cetera, et cetera. So I woke up early, did all that. And then I checked the calendar and I went, oh shit. I've been so distracted with everything else that I forgot to check the Cosmic Zoo calendar, and it turns out there was a recording session there today. So I'm panicking, going, fuck, I have this thing with Greaves and I don't know what I'm going to do. And I call Ben and I'm like, fuck, how can we do this mobile? And Ben's like, oh, my computer's fried, dude. Like, we can't do, my laptop is no good right now, so we can't do an hour live or hour recording mobile. And I said, fuck. I'm like, all right, cool, let me call Greaves. So I call Greaves up and I'm like, hey, man, I know that you kind of travel with a lot of tech nerd shit and you probably record on the road and stuff. Like, does your computer have a Pro Tools setup where we could record the podcast? He goes, I don't have Pro Tools, but I do have Reason and we can do it in Reason. And he's like, and I happen to have some shotgun mics, so we wouldn't even have to use Shure 58s. And I'm like, Greaves, that's amazing. So we set up his two shotgun mics in the green room and got to it. We set it up. And so it might not sound the same, but it probably is still going to sound good because, of course, my Ben Shim, always makes the shit sound buttery. So, you know, it might not sound as crazy as the usual ones, or it might sound a little different, but I'm sure he's going to make it sound amazing. And that was the situation. So we sat in this fucking steamy green room and talked about Greaves's life, and it was great. And right as we got to the peak of the story, my buddy Colin came in and said, hey, it's time to sound check. So we closed it up in 5 minutes, and I think that it was a great podcast. I had a lot of fun talking to him, and that was the crazy story behind this one, which in turn became our first mobile podcast. And it just goes to show that regardless of what happens, you got to be a problem solver and not a quitter. Because this morning at about 10:30, when I found out the studio was booked, my first reaction was, oh fuck, how do I fix this? Not, oh fuck, I can't do this. You know, I think we kind of talk about that in the podcast a little bit too. Like, you just gotta have some stick-to-itiveness in everything you do. You know, the longer that you stick to something and the harder you work, the luckier you get. So anyhow, blah, blah, blah. That's my moral for the day. Hopefully you guys enjoy this podcast, and remember to download the podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and subscribe. Leave ratings and comments, because the more that you do that, the more of a chance we might get to like the new and noteworthy section or the front page of iTunes or something. You know, so do that. Help us. Help us. Help you. Help us keep bringing this podcast to you. And look out for next week. We have a really cool guest and a cool performance that I'm excited about. So without further ado, here is my conversation with my homeboy Greaves. That's your first time headlining in Europe?
First time headlining, yeah. I mean, I've been there before. But
yeah. In what context were you over there before? With who?
I've never been to Europe without Brother Ali.
Oh, really?
I've been there like four times with Brother Ali.
That's the Euro hookup?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Because we did a Rhymesayers one too, but Brother Ali was there. And then I did two runs with Brother Ali over there. And then my fourth time, I went dolo.
Nice.
I've done some festivals out there.
Yeah. But it went good.
It went good. It went really good. I mean, we never did more than 200 people or whatever. Like, Paris was probably our biggest thing, and I think we did like 175 or something like mm-hmm. that. But it just felt so good to play in front of, like, to cross an ocean and see like people come out and see them sing the songs. You're like, whoa, this is actually really happening right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Particularly when English is not their first language. That is quite the phenomenon.
Dude, we were in Germany, and I do the, you know, burn it down thing. And I was like, Can you say burn it down?
Yeah.
And this girl is in the front row, and she's dancing like a, I compare it to like a baby giraffe on a frozen pond.
Okay.
Like, you know, like that's Bambi or whatever, way lankier. So like a giraffe.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I can say burn it down. And I was like, all right. And I put the mic in her face, and she's like, fuck it down. Fuck it down. I'm like, that's not what I was asking, but all right.
And then you should have asked her to say squirrel. Germans have a problem with squirrel. Squirrel.
We played fucking Hamburg, and you can buy sex at the McDonald's for 39 euros.
Shut the fuck.
Yeah, you can. Dude, no. they have a separate menu, and it's like when you walk up to the McDonald's, there's the golden arches on the front. And then there's pictures of prostitutes all over the, like giant. Don't make me Google this, man.
No, I believe you. Well, do you know why they call it a fucking Royale with cheese, though?
Because you can get your asshole licked.
It's like the golden arches and the golden butt cheeks.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
They got little nipples on the top of the arches.
Yeah, yeah. How long have you been a touring musician now? It seems like a long time.
I went on tour with Atmosphere, I'd say, in 2007. And then after that, my manager made me quit my job. So I guess that's like the official.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been touring since 2004, like back with like Type and those dudes. We used to just book shows off of MySpace and shit. And
mm-hmm.
I played the Bunny Ranch in Carson City, you know, that HBO whorehouse.
Yeah.
I played that place like back in 2006 or something like that. Cause like the dude that like found prostitutes for Dennis Huff was like super into this like really emotional song that I made called Composure.
Really?
And he had just gotten out of jail. His name was Guilty One, and he's the shit.
Yeah.
But he's like, hey man, I'm really feeling that Composure song. I want to bring you out to do a show in Nevada. And so we went to Carson City, and we stayed at the Bunny Ranch.
He's like, get paid with anal sex.
Yeah, you get to fuck prostitutes in the ass. we didn't get the tokens. We didn't get free sex.
Mm.
But we played, and they sent us to the club with a prostitute as a date so that we looked like we were balling and shit.
Yeah.
It was...
Well, how many people were at that show? Was it all just like middle-aged prostitutes?
Dude, it was pretty thugged out. Like a dude got stabbed in the parking lot.
Really?
Yeah, they were not. They didn't want us there.
Wow.
But the Bunny Ranch did. So we did that twice. We stayed at the Bunny Ranch. We got our own private bungalow in the back and shit.
Yeah. The second time you got brought out by Guilty Two.
Come on,
give it to me. You have a pretty interesting history. I feel like you're the perfect like outlier in all of this shit, because you've had some amazing opportunities that you've been able to take advantage of. I feel like, because it's like a combination thing of where opportunities need to be presented, but also you have to be smart enough to take advantage of them. And I think that you've done both of those. And so that's why I've been so hungry to have you on the podcast. Because not only are you my buddy, and I like you. But also, I think you got an interesting story. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Chicago.
So that's where you were born at, right?
That's where I was born. Right. Well, I guess I was born in Waukegan, but...
Where's that? That's in Illinois?
Yeah, it's like outside of Chicago, but... Okay. It's where Jaybird from Rhymesayers is from.
No shit. You know, one of the first people I ever like interviewed was Jaybird for a class assignment.
Really?
I had this marketing class and it was at photo school and I was like, I was probably like 20 maybe.
Was he a dick?
He was mad cool, dude.
Really?
Yeah. They were nice. We want you to call somebody that you respect their work and their business ethic and like interview them. And I was like, everybody else, of course, had a photo school called photographers. And I was like, I want to call the dude who's like the operating officer of fucking Rhymesayers. Yeah. And so I talked to him for like an hour on the phone. It was really cool.
Nice.
Anyways. Yeah. So you're born in Waukegan.
Yeah,
and then what happens?
I got adopted.
Tell me like the situation like with your birth mother. Like, happened with it? You never have you met her?
I don't know.
No,
I don't even know like medical history or anything like
nothing
that.
Nothing like that.
Yeah, it's pretty much like all a myth.
Really?
I'm a legend.
So you're just born into a hospital and there's like a family. Like,
kind of like Jesus.
Did you have to go into a foster care or anything like that?
No, it was like it was prearranged.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, that's why I just say Chicago because I spent probably a matter of minutes in Waukegan.
Okay.
And then.
So the family that adopted you was living in Chicago at the time?
Yep. And, and then we lived in Evanston, which is just north of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there till fifth grade.
The family that adopted you, are they a family that adopt a lot of kids? Like,
yeah,
is that what happened?
They adopted three of us.
Three of you guys.
Yeah.
And was it all where like they had met the woman carrying the baby?
I don't think so.
No? You were like a special case that way?
No, well, all my sisters, so the state of Illinois has like a, it wasn't like an open adoption. So my parents didn't know who...
Mm. They weren't in contact with her.
No, they went through an agency, like an adoption agency. And then we're not allowed to contact the birth parents until we're 21 years old. But they're allowed to contact you.
At any time.
Legally, yeah, at any time. But you can't reach out until you're 21.
And so she's never reached out?
She's never reached out. Both my sister's parents did, and it's been like pretty negative.
Really? So was that like a thing that has detracted you from trying to reach out?
Well, and it's like... I don't know the circumstances in which I came to be like, it could have just been like, oh, I can't afford this. Or I could have been like a rape baby or something crazy. Like you don't know what kind of pain that might bring back to somebody.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's the same shit. Like it's out of the way. It's over. Like, let's not.
So, I mean, is it something that you think about or is it kind of out of sight, out of mind?
I really think that other people think about it more than I do. Because I've known about it my whole life.
Because here I am, the asshole, bringing it up.
Oh, my girls, all the time. My girl's like, we should try to find her. And I'm like, I think that's you romanticize that more than I do.
Well, you know Wax, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wax is also adopted. And him and his brother are identical twins that were adopted. And they never had the desire to really reach out into their birth parents.
They were together,
They were
right?
born and kept together, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So they got adopted by the same family. But they never really had the desire to reach out to their biological parents until Wax's brother had a baby. And they're like, okay, we should figure out like our genetics and shit, you know?
Yeah.
So Wax had a nephew. They find their biological parents. And it actually turned out to be a very positive thing, you know?
Well, that's good.
It's nice, yeah.
It's possible. Too, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it's not really
right now
necessary.
It's not where you're at in your life.
It's not really necessary. Like there's been like a few medical things that came up, but like it just took a little time to figure out,
right?
And like to be honest, like can I find both of them?
Yeah,
like is one of them gonna fix that? Like,
right?
So I don't know.
So your family that brought you in though, like everything cool with them.
Yeah, they're saints, man. Yeah, I mean, they took three strange children into their home and raised them as their own.
Are you the youngest that they brought in?
I'm the middle.
You're the middle.
So I got two sisters on each side.
Older sister, younger sister.
I actually saw my little sister last night in San Francisco.
She lives up there? What does she do?
She, I think, is not working right now, but she was working at a coffee shop.
Nice.
She's kind of hippied out.
Yeah. What's that dynamic like? Like, do you just... And I know that I'm bringing this up and fucking like really stepping on it a bunch, but it's like, I just am curious. Like, is it like that? That is like your sister. That's how you look at it. Like, that's my sister. Like, I'm going to be in contact with her forever, regardless. Like, that's my sister.
Yeah. I mean, we've known our situation since we could comprehend speech.
Oh, so they told you immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah,
like, not like they didn't wait until like, you know, we were in junior high or something. Right. Like, okay, so you know about the, it was just like from the second we could understand human beings.
Right.
We knew what it was. So it's not like we were never pulling shit like, you're not my real mom.
Right. I'm sure that's such a common question of like, oh, did you ever rebel because they weren't your biological parents?
Yeah, no.
I did have one, because I had one friend in high school who like had to do the whole orphanage thing as a child. Yeah. And like, dude, he was a hellion once he got adopted, because it was kind of like, man, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want. You know, because he was basically like being in an orphanage, like being in fucking juvie. You know what
it
I mean?
It is like being in juvie. Sometimes it's fucking worse.
Yeah, for sure. So he like got through all that and then was just like the biggest weed dealer at our school and stuff, which is funny. Okay, so you moved to Evanston, is that what you said? Where's that?
Yeah, it's just north of the city. Like it's like
of Chicago.
Yeah, consider it like a burb.
So you're in the Midwest for most of the time until you're like what, 7, 8?
Fifth grade. Yeah.
And then where do you guys go?
Colorado. Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah, as a youth, like did you take to music as a kid?
Yeah, well, you know, it was yes, but not. I didn't really take to it as playing.
Right, but like listening or more passionate than other people?
Oh, yeah. I used to sit by my dad's like speakers with the headphones on by the turntable, you know, and just like sit cross-legged in front of like listening to the records and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was the same way.
But, you know, and pretty much all the music that I had as a kid, it was my dad's music.
Like, right.
I didn't actually buy my own music until Green Day Dookie came out.
Wow, that's a good first record. That's right around the beginning of my like coming into my own as
purchasing
well.
Things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a huge fucking record when it was a huge tape when it came out.
I bought that, Offspring Smash, and Aerosmith Get a Grip in the same day.
Right around that same time, I bought those two tapes, and then also Keith Murray's The Most Beautiful Thing.
Oh, nice. Yes, hell yes.
Yeah, I remember. I actually walked out of the store with Offspring Smash and Keith Murray Most Beautiful Thing.
And they're like, that guy.
It wasn't a store. Taste. It was at a youth center dance. Actually, I won them in a dance competition.
Oh no, shit.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Wait, did you dance?
Oh yeah,
you killed it and you won that.
Well, yeah. I may have told this story before on the podcast, but back when I was like in elementary, it was like around sixth or seventh grade. It was like at the youth center, they would have dance competitions, or they would have Friday night dances, and then you know the dance competitions. Most people were like scared to enter them, but I would just enter because I knew no one else was going to, and then I would kind of just like do the crisscross dance where you lift one leg at a time. You know what I'm saying? And I would win that way, and so I'd win tapes.
Yeah. How many times did you win the dance competition? They're like, here's this fucking kid.
I won
with the
so many
again.
Competitions there with either dancing or like trivia, like music trivia. I would like kill at that too. Like I would win so many fucking records that way, or like tapes that way. It was
no
tight.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah. But so was your mom musical too? Like, was she into music, or was it just mainly dad was like had
it
a
was
huge collection?
Mainly dad. My mom had like an auto harp playing around, and she said that she played it, but I never saw her pick that thing up.
Yeah.
So
did dad play as well?
My dad had like guitars. He played guitar. His grandfather was a piano, or my grandfather, his father was a piano player, but had to leave Germany because of the Holocaust.
Right, because the adopted family that picked you up is Jewish.
Yeah.
Right.
So they fled. They fled Germany and escaped the Holocaust. And he kind of, you know, he had to give up playing the piano and he ran a grocery store instead. But we had, this is kind of dark, but my mother was in a plane accident when she was 16.
A plane accident?
Yeah.
Wow.
At Midway Airport in Chicago, the plane hit a billboard. And
what?
Her mom died.
Wow.
On the seat next to her.
Wow.
And so...
So they had just taken off? Or were they about
to
land?
I think they were landing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy
and,
shit.
So my mom lost her mom, you know, when she was like a teenager.
Yeah.
And then her dad married this woman with like 8 kids from the church.
Wow.
And so my mom kind of was not down for it and kind of rebelled against all that.
Yeah.
And she kept her mother's piano, which was like this giant grand piano.
Yeah.
So she lugged it with her everywhere that she
went.
And
so that was in the house you grew up in.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we had that giant piano. So when my opa would come by, he would just, you know, that was a treat for him because it was a giant, beautiful piano that he got to play. And
right.
It got no play in our house because nobody played the piano. It was just, it was a sentimental thing for my mom. And so what it really was for us was a fortress because we would play underneath it and we would like set blankets over it.
Yeah,
and like
build
put
a fort.
All, yeah. So we used
but
to
But when
sit
you would see
there.
Him play, was it kind of like light bulbs going off in your head a little bit or what?
Well,
like,
we used to just lay under there
out.
When he played.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, all the resonance, you could just like feel it in your body, especially as like a kid. So we'd just lay on the carpet underneath it while he would play.
Mm-hmm.
And you could like feel it through the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I mean, shit, that was my whole entire youth pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds like a very vibrant memory.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dope.
because we had a small living room, so everything went under that piano, like all the little toy chests and shit, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's three of us and two girls, so there's like laundry baskets full of ponies and shit. So
how much were your sisters dressing you up and making you have tea parties?
I would like to say not often, but I don't really remember, so I'm gonna say never.
Yeah. Did either of them take to music at all as well? Like, it makes you wonder about the whole nature versus nurture thing.
No, they didn't. I mean, my little sister likes music. I don't know what the fuck my older sister's into other than meth. So,
oh, that's sad.
It happens, man.
Yeah, it does. It
definitely
does.
Happens.
Yeah, yeah. Is Colorado a methy place? Or what?
It's pretty methy.
Yeah.
It's kind of heroin-y now, too.
Is it?
And it's weird because when heroin finds its place into a small, or when it finds its way into a small place like that, it really fucks
it's
people up.
It's destructive.
Because there's no history of it there, so there's no...
Like, it takes people a while to catch on to what's happening.
It takes a couple people dying for people to catch on to what's happening.
Right, right. Like, oh, wait, why are these kids overdosing?
Wiping kids out. Mm. It sucks.
That's terrible. Yeah, we deal with a lot of heroin in L.A. It's a sad thing, dude.
Seattle.
Yeah. True. The hometown of fucking heroin. No.
Yeah, we made strung out look chic.
Yeah, for real. As a kid in Evanston, like, what did you take to other than music?
I don't know. Like, I tried to play sports. I never really liked sports. It was a good way to get off the block. Like, because
you didn't want to be caught in the trap.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't allowed to leave. We didn't live in the best neighborhood. Yeah. So my parents weren't like pumped on me, like hopping on my bike and riding away.
Right.
So it was a good way for me to like get out of the off the street that we lived on and go like to a goddamn park or hang out with other
kids.
What
sports? Soccer? Baseball?
Baseball.
Yeah.
The classic American boy
sport. Of course.
But I pretty much all it was sitting on a bench with a nut cup on for me, also just sweating out of my little nuts that fucking cup.
Yeah. So when you guys move from Evanston and when you're in fifth grade or whatever and into Colorado, like what?
Well, then I was allowed to leave the block, and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, what made you guys relocate?
My dad worked for Teledyne. They make the electric toothbrushes and the shower heads and shit. So my dad taught dentistry at Loyola and then was working on their quality control for their products at Teledyne. And they moved us out there.
And then in turn became like one of the lead researchers in female masturbatory products by accident.
Oh, because of those shower heads? Or if you got a really gnarly vibrating vagina, you could use one of those water picks.
Oh, yeah.
That are supposed to be like water floss.
Ugh.
You could just...
If those don't tickle my butthole, I don't know what does. I'm just kidding. So things are going well and he moves to Colorado? Is that what happens? Or he just gets
They move us out there. Yeah. Then they lay him off.
Oh.
Like, after like a year that we get there.
No shit.
So he's like, all right, we're packing it up. We're going back.
And you moved to Boulder?
I moved to Fort Collins.
Fort Collins. I knew that.
They're kind of similar towns.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when I first moved there, I was kind of like, and when I lived in Evanston, I went to a place called Martin Luther King Lab School.
Mm.
And then I went to Colorado where there's not a fucking black person in sight, like at all. And I felt confused and I was really out of place and everything seemed like, fake.
So in Evanston, you were kind of the minority a little bit, or
a little bit. I mean, the neighborhood, like the part of the neighborhood that I lived in, was like actually all right, and then the school was not so hot, and there was like a lot of fighting for me growing up,
right?
Or it was a lot of getting my ass whooped, is what what it was.
Okay, yeah.
And then I moved to Colorado. And it was just like...
It's all white folks.
It felt like a fucking movie, like a Disney movie.
And so are you like the tough kid in town that had just come from a bad neighborhood now? Or
No, I was confused. So I felt like, you know how like when you take a dog and you put it like somewhere else out of its surrounding, it gets a little defensive?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I was when I first got there, because it didn't feel real. So it's like, I was fucking around a little bit. And I think it was actually worse for my sister because she was older than me. So I think that's how she got into all the shit that she got into.
Right.
You know, I was fighting and picking fights with kids just to see, like, is this real? Are you real? Is this real, motherfucker?
Right.
And,
well, that's a very, like, formative time of your childhood to have to move, too. Like, that's where you're really coming into your own. And so to have to kind of start over during that time must make things that much
more
confusing.
You're starting to learn the social stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was cool. I remember when we pulled up, the moving truck pulled up, we were staying at the hotel and we get to the house. And the neighbors come out of the house with like cookies and shit. And they come walking across the street. And I was like, it is like a movie. It's like a movie. And then the kids roll up with a bike and they're like, hey, do you want to go to the pool? And I was like, you guys have a pool?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, the neighborhood has a pool.
Whoa.
I was like, the motherfucking neighborhood has a pool?
That's tight.
And I was like, where is it? I didn't see it. And they're like, oh, it's like a mile away. I was like, oh, I can't go.
Yeah, I'm not allowed off the block.
Yeah, I'm not allowed. I can't go.
Yeah.
Because there's like a lake behind their house. And I was like, is that what you're talking about? They're like, no, it's like a pool with like diving boards and like popsicles and shit.
Yeah.
Okay. And my parents are like, no, you can go.
Yeah.
And so they pull our bikes out of the moving truck. And I'm just sitting there like, I actually don't know what to do with all this freedom.
Yeah.
So that freedom was like, yeah, kind of pushing back a little bit.
Right.
Being like, can I do this? Mm-hmm. Can I do this?
Right, right. But you're only there for a year before the rug gets pulled under, or what?
Well, yeah. And so I just started to acclimate. Like, after a year, I was like, I think I actually kind of like it here.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never done any, like, outdoorsy stuff living in Chicago, you know?
Uh-huh.
But then it was like, hey, do you want to go skiing? And it's like, skiing was a rush. And it was like, oh, this is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's things, you know, I was meeting friends quicker. And my manager, Matt,
yeah,
I met him in fifth grade playing Pogs.
That's where you met him at, yeah?
Yeah, and he's downstairs right now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So he was like one of my first friends when I moved to Fort Collins.
Yeah.
And, I guess it just felt weird. My mom really wanted to go cause she has this romantic relationship with Chicago. She loves it. And, I don't think any of us wanted to go. And so my dad just G'd up and he took a job in Denver probably when I think it was like seventh grade. So maybe we were there for 2 years.
Yeah.
He G'd up. He took the job in Denver, and he's been commuting to Denver ever since I was in seventh grade, which is about an hour and a half drive to and from every day.
Oh, so
a 3 hour commute total.
So the house is still in Fort Collins, but he was driving to Denver every day.
Every single day.
Wow.
And he's been doing that for shit since I was in seventh grade.
Still does it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's got to be retiring pretty soon, huh?
He won't do it.
He's not going to retire.
He's 70.
No shit.
My dad is old balls.
I was going to say, we had dinner with your dad that Thai place in fucking
Denver.
In Denver.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look like he should still be working.
He doesn't want to stop. And you know, his dad lived to be 103 years old.
Holy shit.
So my opa lived to be 103 years old, and that dude worked until he literally, I don't think legally, was allowed to work anymore.
Wow.
And after that dude would go to the horse track once a week and eat at McDonald's every day.
No
shit.
He
lived to fucking 103 years old.
See, I'm saying, dude, McDonald's not that bad for
you. It keeps you alive.
I feel like McDonald's is, eating McDonald's is similar to like not washing your hands. I think it actually makes your immune system,
tolerance.
Makes your immune system a little stronger. You feel me? So you mentioned that the family your family is a Jewish. So like, was religion a big thing with you guys? Like, were you spiritually Jewish or just kind of culturally Jewish?
It was when we were, in Chicago.
Yeah.
It was a big thing. And it wasn't a spiritual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mom's actually not Jewish. My mom's father was like a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided that they would raise us Jewish because of the history with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an important thing for us to learn about. And some people actually choose to ignore what happened there. And I think that they thought that it was really important for us to have that in our lives.
Right.
So we were raised Jewish. I went to Hebrew school and all that.
Bar mitzvah and all that?
I didn't get bar mitzvah up because by the time I moved to Colorado, it was so hard to find a temple or a synagogue in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Right, right.
Jesus country.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And there was one, I think it was called Temple Bethlehem. And my dad hated the rabbi because he would change his name every month in the newsletter. He'd be like, it's Rabbi Jack. Now it's Rabbi John.
It was
Rabbi
P. Diddy.
Yeah, he hated it. And he's like, this guy's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
You guys don't have to go here if you want because, you know, this is supposed to be like a cultural thing for you.
Yeah.
And this guy's an idiot. So if you don't want to do it, you don't have to because this is like a smoke and mirrors thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the neighborhood in Fort Collins. Is that where the family still, that's where the family still lives?
Same
neighborhood.
House, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a pretty nice neighborhood then, right? Because you said Matt's mom does pretty well.
Yeah, she does really well.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about Fort Collins. She also doesn't live like she
does.
But it's kind of like Pleasantville out there. Like, there's three styles of... So neighborhoods, they have names for the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in... Golden Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in Warren Landings. And Warren Landings was across this, there's a street called LeMay that separated the two neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren Landings was real nice.
Mm-hmm.
And he had like all the big houses. And then over here you had these three particular kind of houses. And like
Track homes.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's where we live. Like, I could, like...
Both of those neighborhoods still sound beautiful, though. Yeah,
Golden Meadows.
Golden Meadows and Warren Landing, like, sounds heavenly.
Dude, every time I go home, this is kind of jumping off track, but I figured you'd appreciate this. There's a sign that says Golden Meadows. When you pull off that street that divides the two neighborhoods, and it's like a red sign, and it's got a little, like slow the fuck down, don't hit this sign, kind of reflector sign in front of it. And, I was like a little badass kid, and so I got expelled from high school and sent to this like managed adolescent care thing with a bunch of little badass kids, and so I didn't get laid for like a while.
Yeah.
And when I got out of this like detention center or whatever, I was like in my junior year in high school, and you know, I hadn't seen a fucking vagina or anything like that, and my friends had been, you know, hanging out with all these high school girls and shit. And I wasn't like, I was like on house arrest and shit like that. So I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. So I got
to circle back and go into all of this. Yeah, so this is the story that will spark that off.
I got this freedom, and they're like, oh, let's go out to dinner. Like, let's go to Quiznos or something with fucking Karen. I was like, who's Karen? And they're like, oh, she's so hot. We're all trying to fuck her. I was like, you guys are trying to fuck girls? Like, oh, shit. And so I was like, all right, whatever. And they're all getting high, and they go to the Quiznos, and I'm sitting behind the driver's seat in the, you know, in the back, and they all get out of the car and start running up to Quiznos like high school boys, you know, fucking, fuck you and fucking suck my dick, whatever the hell they're talking about. And she stays in the car, and she locks the doors, and she pulls the fucking seat thing and shoots the seat back and traps me in the back seat.
Oh, shit.
And she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I was going to get some Quiznos.
Karen was really about that life.
Karen made me her boyfriend. Oh. More like her bitch.
Yeah, she's like, hold my belt loop.
Yeah, pretty much. Hold on my pocket fish.
Yeah, yeah.
So she started, like, touching my dick and stuff like that. Like, you know.
Wait, should I have my pants on for this story? This is getting a little sensual.
Not at that moment, but she decided, you know, that she would start touching my dick at times because I've never had my dick touched.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't fuck me because she had gotten like pregnant.
Wow.
And she's like, at 16, I don't want to have sex because, you know, I got pregnant. It
was, she's like, I'm really very virile.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was a really crazy thing for me or whatever.
Yeah.
And well, she ended up fucking me just so I could be the one. But
there you go.
She was crazy, and she would just like pull over and be like, you ever had a blowjob before? I'm like, no one has touched my dick. Like, nothing has ever happened to this dick unless I did it. And really, it's just like a really short masturbation, you know, trying to not have my mom hear me in these paper thin walls. So no, I've never had a blowjob. And
I've only had dental picks, water picks shoved up my butt. My dad works for them.
And fucking, you know, she's driving and she's giving me a hand job.
While she's driving. Thank God it wasn't a stick shift.
No, it was a fucking Malibu, like when they started, when they remade the Malibu.
Oh yeah.
And she's jerking me off and I'm like, oh, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, it's just the world is, my head is numb and she's jacking me off. And I see that my turn's coming up and I'm like, you got to fucking turn, you know? And she drove like fucking crazy. Like, she shouldn't have been jacking me off.
Golden Meadows, turn!
She drives right into the sign.
Into the shower sign.
Right into the Golden Meadows sign.
Oh, into the Golden Meadows sign.
And bent the sign back. And still to this day, it's like bent back. Where she ran into it with her Chevy Malibu
from your hand job,
jacking me off.
Wow.
So I can always see my first hand job when I go home, because
that is amazing. Your dick must be a real upper. It just made her drive like a crazy
after
person.
That, it's just terrified.
It's
a very scared penis.
Yeah. So now every time you're about to nut, you feel like you're about to run into something.
I'm about to die.
You're like, oh fuck.
I cover my eyes and clench my ass real tight.
Oh, Jesus.
Slow down, Karen. And then I come.
Oh, God. Karen is my mom's name, dude. So to hear you say slow down, Karen, is so disturbing. Oh, shit. All right. So that whole story fucking sparks off a whole line of questions that I didn't even know about. Like, okay, so when did you start like rebelling and getting in trouble in school? What happened with that?
I think I just a product of my environment with my sister. You know, she was older, so.
And she was obviously getting into some bad shit.
Dude, first time I ever did acid was at the 7th grade dance, and she gave me...
How much older is she?
She's only 2 years older
than me. Oh, that's it. So she was in 9th grade, you're in 7th grade.
Yeah, and it was my first dance. You know, I was like, I'm going to the dance.
Did you win any tapes?
I didn't win shit. Oh. But they did take a picture of me, put it in the yearbook when I was just fucking blasted off of acid. She gave me this, it was called Animation Recreation.
Uh-huh.
And I was so fucked up. Actually, one of the kids that I took it with is coming tonight. His name is Mitch.
Nice.
And we went to his house and we took all this acid. We probably shouldn't have taken all of it, but we took it all because we didn't know what it was. She was like, just put this paper in your mouth like an hour before you go to the dance and you're going to have the best time of your life. I was like, okay.
Did she have older friends that you wanted to bang?
No, she never brought her friends around and they're all kind of methed out. They used to
even
rob
back
me.
Then.
I got robbed at knife point by one of my sister's friends.
Even back then in seventh grade, that was already like the case?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
She was... Yeah,
just around a bad bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I mean, I was like smoking cigarettes and shit. We used to, in fifth grade, they had like this business park behind our school, mm-hmm. and we used to hop the fence and break into these cars and steal Doral full flavors.
Mm.
Like the car, this dude would just leave them in his car. So every day we'd go by there and steal them and smoke them by the lake, like a bunch of dumbasses.
Bunch of little badasses. Bunch of super cool
my
kids.
My sister's like, oh, so you a badass?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she gives me a little weed, and we're like all smoking weed in like sixth and seventh grade, and then we're tripping acid at seventh grade dances.
Does that lead to, as far as like rebellion goes in class, are you just kind of being a smartass class clown? Like, what was it?
Well, I got into it too early.
Seeker? Yeah.
I was real quiet.
Yeah.
I was real quiet. I didn't talk to people. Since I got into it so early, there's a progression of things, you know, normally starts with weed.
It happens a little faster when you start that early, probably.
Yeah. And, you know, by the time I was in high school, I was selling coke and doing, you know, shit that probably
college age kids are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had like gone through the phase quicker. And then those people were like, can you get any weed?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
You want some heroin?
Yeah. Yeah.
By the time I got to high school, I was on to some more complicated things, and they did not like that. And so
school didn't like
that.
Yeah. So you got caught selling drugs or something?
Yeah, they set up like a whole operation and fucking set me up. And I mean, I should have gone to jail, but I didn't because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave me a chance to get out of it by going through this thing called drug court and then going to that managed adolescent care place instead of juvie. So,
and that's like a kind of a continuation school or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there from like 8 a.m. to like 6 p.m. every day.
Did you have to learn like a trade or something?
No, it was really full of like little kids. I was the oldest person there by far.
Mm.
But it was like little kids that like had stabbed somebody or something like that. Like they're just like fucked up little kids.
Yeah. So like these sixth graders are like, hey, bitch, give me your money.
Exactly.
Give me your lunch money. Exactly. You're like, come on,
there's a lot of like face palming kids. Like, nah. They ain't having it, dude.
Yeah.
And then like little girls that had like been pregnant, like from their first bleed.
Wow.
Pretty much. Like,
yeah. So you're getting a lot of 12-year-old pussy thrown at you.
Dude, a lot of 12-year-old pussy thrown at me. Yeah.
That's scary, dude. Thank God you didn't succumb to the pressures of that and waited for Karen.
The place disgusted me so much. Yeah. I waited for Karen, my sweet, sweet princess.
Karen, we miss you.
You know, I actually finished my first like 2 years of high school in that place by reading the lesson plan in the book,
going home and doing it on your
having
own.
Having homework sent from the school district, and then I would do it and then send it in to a district grader. They would grade it, and I got my first 2 year of high school credits that way.
Mm.
I was my own high school teacher for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy.
Pretty intense.
Was your operation of selling like pretty well organized? Like, do you think that in hindsight, maybe it was kind of like a precursor to the fact that like you kind of have a good business mind? Cause I think like as a rapper, you kind of have a good business mind too, you know?
I had ideas, but I didn't get to accomplish them. And I actually thank God for that because
otherwise you'd be Walter White, right?
I'd be selling drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was going to work. And it was the time that I set up what was going to be like, all right, I'm going to take over all of this.
Yeah.
It got shut down the second I upped to take over.
Right, right.
So
would you say that sometimes the rap game reminds you of the crack game? No, I'm just kidding.
Indeed.
Fuck.
But maybe not the crack you're thinking about.
At what point do you start rapping when you're in the middle of all this trouble? Because I feel like you had to start rapping while you were in high school.
I had a lot of writing, you know, like I would do the high school work and then I didn't want to talk to those fucking kids. So
you had
a lot
of time.
I had a lot of time. Did a lot of writing.
What kind of writing?
Writing raps and shit, writing songs. And
what rap were you into?
At that age, Wu-Tang, everything. Like, I had the Wu-Wear pants and
hell
shit.
Yeah.
Like, I was Wu'd out. I was I was about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But I was still like, I was still coming out of my punk rock phase. So it's like, I was in like a Minor Threat t-shirt with a like Wu Wear pants. And
yeah, but it's great because like punk rock and hip hop at that time were kind of in from these similar veins. Like, I mean, they have a lot of like similar things that cross paths throughout history, but it was definitely, it comes from that same adolescent fucking turmoil. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Most I just had to figure out the, like the lifestyle thing. Cause both of those genres, like, portrayed like this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think as a kid, you're always trying to fit into like one of those lifestyles. So you're like, oh, I listen to punk rock. Mm-hmm. I got safety pins in my pants and all sorts of shit. Like, But at once, I feel like going to that school, I was like, man, I don't fucking fit in anywhere, clearly. So I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Right.
So, and I feel like that actually helped me with my music because I don't stick to one side of things. Like, I just kind of want to do whatever I want to do with that.
When you
time.
Got blessed with a very pretty voice. Ooh. Sometimes I just text you out of the blue and tell you that you sing so pretty. Because you do. You're a good singer.
Well, it took a long time.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You can tell that you're well-practiced. Yeah. When did the rap start kind of taking off? Like, did you, when you start writing them, like, how do you start making beats? How do you start recording them?
I don't know. You started kicking raps, you know, like.
To who? To Matt?
Like, at, like, parties and shit, you know? Like, you have the my buddy Scotty had like turntables, and the dude that actually started getting me to rap, we worked at the grocery store together when I was kicked out of school because I had to have a job. Was one of my.
Were you a stocker or a bagger?
I was a bagger.
Oh yeah.
In the day, well,
that was my first job too.
Stocker because you kind of had to do everything, but we used to just steal cigarettes. Like they'd be like, "Go throw the trash out," and I'd go buy all the cigarettes and like knock a couple cartons into the trash and take them outside and fucking hide them in a bush and then go get them after.
Oh yeah.
After my shit, but. Yeah. So I hipped him to my little operation that I had going on with my cigarettes. And so he was like, "You like smoking weed?" I was like, "I love smoking weed, but I can't because I take 3 piss tests a week."
Holy shit.
Yeah, they were on it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, "Well, do you like Wu-Tang?" I was like, "I love Wu-Tang."
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he's like, "Check it out. I rap." And he was like rapping at me. I was like, "Oh, shit. I rap, but I've never done it to any, you know, I've never rapped at anybody before." So he kind of taught me about like freestyling and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
So Scotty was his roommate. And he had these turntables. He fucking ordered them out of the back of the Source.
Oh, shit.
You know, like, that was how we could find them. You know, they didn't have a store in Fort Collins.
That, right, right.
So he ordered these, like, Newmark belt-driven fucking purple turntables out the back of the Source.
Yeah.
And we waited for him to come. And, you know, we bought a bunch of, like, records with B-side instrumentals and shit. And
started recording over instrumentals.
Just started rapping. Yeah, and started recording, like, through the DJ mixer into, like a tape deck.
Oh, okay.
So
you guys are even before computers, you were already trying to rap.
Yeah, none of us had computers.
Yeah. That's tight. And so when do people at your school start catching on? Because I think to this day, you still have a pretty strong following in like the Fort Collins and Denver area.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that they ever did until I left.
Okay.
Because I had no career until I was in Seattle for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back to Colorado, all my friends were like, "Oh, yeah, we'll go to your concert."
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could put 100 people in a room back in Fort Collins without a single fan. I just had friends.
Friends, right.
And nothing goes on in that town. So when something happens and you know the person there,
people
it's a
show
thing.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was it. And then.
So what took you out of Seattle then? Do you actually like graduate high school or you
I graduate high school.
So you get out of the like whatever that kind of weird juvie hellhole sounds like that you were in, and you get to go back into like gen pop and like fucking go to high school.
I go to high school. I
finish up. And that's when Karen gives you the hand job.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It was in a transition period. It was like after Mac, but before high school.
Okay. So then how many years of high school do you get to go to? 2, 1?
So the high school went by Hexters, so they had 6 weeks periods or whatever.
That sounds very forward thinking. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. No, it's 6 week periods. And so I did a full year and then the first Hexter the next year because I had done so much previous work that it just kind of all, my credits were done for high school. So I really only had to go to 1 year, I guess, of high school, and then that last
but you
year.
But you also got to be, like, the star football quarterback and the prom king, I heard.
We didn't have any of those things because our school was full of all the kids that weren't allowed to go to the public school. We had all been kicked out of the public schools.
Wow.
And this was still considered a public school, but it was, like, the last stop. So
that's why Karen never gave you a blowjob, because she like kept a razor in her cheek or what?
Well, she didn't go to our school. She went to the big school,
the
cool school. I fucked someone outside of our realm.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Because our school is full of like pregnant gothic chicks or the white girls that dress like the Chola girls, like with the black eyeliner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't allowed to have organized sports because we would just fucking fight everyone.
Okay, yeah,
so
that makes sense.
We didn't have that.
So you graduate and college wasn't really on the horizon? Or
college was on the horizon.
Where did you go to school?
I went to go to Evergreen.
Okay.
In Olympia.
Okay.
And when I got there, I'm doing the walkthrough, and my dad's like, I'm going to go take a piss. You talk to this kid, I'll be back. So I'm talking to the guy that's been giving us the tour, and he's like, hey, best part about this school is you don't have to do any homework. You can come up with your own majors, and you can smoke as much weed as you want.
What's Evergreen about?
That's pretty much it. Right,
it's like a liberal arts college.
Yeah, or? You can claim, like, call your own major. It is a liberal arts school, and I went to like a liberal high school kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that would be cool because that school actually really helped me. That high school really changed me, and I wanted to help the world in that way. So I wanted to just go to school to be a teacher.
Yeah,
and I got there, and I was like, "Fuck this place," because I do need the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
This guy literally is here because his parents are making him go to college, but he doesn't want to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to the one where he can smoke weed and fucking get a degree in smoking weed.
You're like, whatever. I don't want a fucking degree in hacky sack.
Exactly. Yeah. I really didn't want to. And for my dad, he's an honest man. He's a hardworking dude.
Yeah.
And he was going to pay for my college because I was the only one of the kids that was going to go.
Yeah.
And it was like $50,000 or something like that a year to go to out of state there.
Yeah.
And I was like, Dad, I'm going to community college because all those teachers work at the community college.
Okay.
So if you're going to get the education from one of those teachers, you're going to get the same damn thing at the community college.
Right, right.
So I went there and I did education for
in
2 years. Yeah.
Okay.
I did 2 years. And then I got into a pretty hefty debate with the teacher about my love for my high school. Pretty much was, I don't feel like there is, you know, there's three teaching styles and that's the way that you have to test out one of those, you know? I was like, fuck that, because there's a million ways to reach a person.
Uh-huh.
So shouldn't it just be however the job gets done is the best way?
Right, right.
You know? And
is your favorite way to reach around?
To reach around.
Sorry, I had to take it.
To press on the prostate firmly.
Sweet. No, so you got in a debate with your education teacher about the styles of teaching or something?
Yeah, and I realized that it wasn't for me.
Like, yeah.
I was like, I can't convince myself. I don't want to test out on something that I don't believe in. I don't want to spend all this money to that I don't believe in and then try to find my way back into that path.
Right, right.
And
which is something that like our nation, I feel like, is going through. It's really going to like bite our nation in the ass pretty soon as far as like teaching for testing, you know what I'm saying? And all that shit. Like,
it's already happening.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Oh, that's been happening. But I feel like eventually that whole system kind of has to crumble because we're so low in the world rankings in education. And that's why, because we're teaching to try and keep up on the world rankings rather than just fucking educating. You know what I'm saying? Or, yeah, anyhow. So you get in a debate with your teacher. And
I said, fuck it.
And then what?
I moved to Seattle at that point.
Are you making music still at this point?
I'm heavy into the music
point. Are you Greaves at this point?
I've been Greaves.
How did you become Greaves? Like, where did the name come from?
Battle rapping.
Battle rapping? Yeah. Do you have a history in the battle world?
I thought that was the only way to do it.
Yeah, a lot. That was kind of the way to do it at that time. Did you ever make the trip to Scribble?
No, I never did, but I used to watch them all the time.
Oh,
I used to get the VHSs and the mail and shit.
Of course.
So, you know, that was like, okay, you got a fucking battle rap.
Yeah. I come from a time where I felt like just because we like flew out to Scribble and were there, like we were doing something, you know what I mean? Like I was like, damn, we're out here grinding. We're at Scribble Jam.
Oh, you went?
I went 3 fucking times, bro.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It did
so much for me, obviously. No, but yeah, I went a few times. But I was also like around a circle where like my friends were winning, you know what I mean? Like it was really,
okay.
Yeah. Like the first year that I went, Immaculate won. And that was like a kid that was crashing on my couch at the time, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the, you know, No Can won. It was a homie and fucking a bunch of my friends won. It was
all
really
so
weird.
You were living in LA at this point?
I was in California. I was in Santa California. In 2004, yeah. I was in Santa Barbara when Immaculate won, and there was like a little mini battle scene in Santa Barbara. And so
California's got, it's still like alive.
Huge
here.
Battle scene. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I still kind of live circulating in a weird Venn diagram around that world little bit. So anyhow, so you're battle rapping kids where? In Olympia?
No, in Fort Collins.
In Fort Collins?
Yeah.
Who are you battling? Did you ever battle Black Pegasus?
No, I lost before I got to Black P. I lost to a dude named Varsity Bars.
Okay.
And this one, the one battle that I was in at Black P, but it was at the Aggie in Fort Collins.
Yeah, yeah. See, I know my battle rappers.
Yeah,
and
Black
regions.
P. He was, he was the shit. He was the one. He was just taking everyone's money at that point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I sucked at it, so I didn't do that.
How did the name Greaves come to you, though?
The lady at the door said I needed a name, and I didn't have one.
Yeah.
So I was just walking around. I, like, took a walk and came back with that name.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
And so, yeah, I'm Greaves at this point. I'm in Olympia. I'm rapping.
Had you put tapes out? Had you put demos out?
Yeah, I tried.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy. I meet this dude at the college, and he's on a record label in Seattle. And his big dude was Seven Hill. And
yeah.
So he starts taking me down there.
Who was he?
His name was Sear.
Okay.
Or Searle.
Okay.
James Searle. And so I moved to Seattle with him when he was done with college, and we get a house together. Uh-huh. Seven Hill defuncts like the second we get to Seattle, so that's done. But they give us some gear, so we set up, you know, the classic closet booth,
of course,
in our house. And so we're doing that, and I'm real serious about it. He's not so serious. He was a rapper one day, a beat maker, and then the next day he wanted to be Bukowski. So
okay, which were you? Were you rapping more or beat making more? Because now
I was both.
You juggle both. Yeah,
I was
always both.
Yeah,
yeah,
because when I was living in Olympia, how the hell was I going to get beats?
Right.
So I was just like, fuck it.
Got to make your own.
I bought some Fruity Loops and started using that shit.
Yeah, of course.
Figured it out, and they were pretty bad.
Yeah.
But whatever, it was something to do. And
Did you ever go back and learn how to play keys?
It's something that I'm actually kind of doing now, because I taught myself some stuff.
Yeah.
And I can definitely work my way around a keyboard.
Yeah.
But I'd like to really work the piano.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
More theory in general would be great for me.
Catch the ghost of Opa, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I hit a wall because I've extended everything that I know.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I'm reusing it a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd love to get more theory under my belt.
Right.
I think the easiest way for me to do that would be with the piano, because I'm already familiar with the instrument. You know, I already know the scales and everything that. So it would be better for me.
Right.
And it'd be better for my singing too. So
Right. So your roommate, what, you guys stopped getting along or something?
Well, no. I realized that he didn't care as much as I did. So whatever.
Yeah.
And now he's like a politician or some shit like that.
Right.
So he was,
I'm sure you've noticed this throughout the years, but I always kind of allude to it, that the fact that like those of us who have stuck with it this long, it's really just like our stick-to-itiveness that kind of keeps us around, and not, maybe not much else. And it's like the only difference between people that are like kind of slowly getting known or doing it or fucking whatever, and the people that don't, is just like people fade away. Like they're like, oh, I want to be a rapper. And then like 3 years later, they kind of have forgotten about it.
Yeah,
and
it's, I don't want to do
you know what I mean? It's like you see, I'm sure you've forgotten more rappers than like, you know what I mean? Like than most people have ever met.
I've seen people that were like, 1 year, the most hip-hop dude you could ever see.
Yeah.
And then the next year, they're like, you know, corporate job. Like, you know, I just realized that wasn't for me.
Yeah, for sure. Like, oh. And I mean, I've seen some people like that who like really caught on for like a year. You know what I'm saying? Like they were huge buzzworthy artists. And then all of a sudden it's like, never mind. And like they just go to normal life. Yeah. So many people in and out of my life that
respect
way.
To them though for being able to take that and
to pivot
to taste it and be like, yeah, it's not for me,
right? Exactly.
Because it's a pretty sweet taste.
It is, dude. I'm still chasing. It's like cocaine for me, where I'm still trying to chase the high of the first show that I had. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
every fucking time I go out.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're making your beats, and then what happens? Doing your raps.
Yeah, and then I really fate kind of stepped in. You know,
what was the fate?
You know, somehow, you know, I linked up with the Grayskull guys. I had started a studio.
Yeah, because those guys were big out in Seattle, right?
Yeah, and, you know, they had started coming through the studio that we had. It was called Robot Room Recordings, and they started coming through, and they were about to go on tour with Atmosphere, and they...
Is this like 05, 06?
07.
07.
And they didn't have a DJ or, like, a van or anything like that, and so they proposed this thing to me, and... And they're like, look, if you DJ for us and...
So let's take a step back. How did you have a van?
I just did.
Yeah, well, but this is...
Because I'd been touring.
Okay, so, you know, people always constantly ask me, like, why don't you tour? Why don't you tour? And it doesn't seem monetarily, like, fucking possible for me at this point. But, like, you are someone who is such an early adopter into the fucking road life that you just saved up money and bought a van, right?
Yeah.
Like... Your manager, Matt, that you've known since fifth grade, you guys, did he start trying to like manage you pretty like immediately? Like he saw something in it?
It was irreversible, right? He was, that was our first project.
Yeah.
Because I was putting out these really shitty things. 2006, 2007.
And so you're on MySpace and you're like, you're doing pretty good on MySpace.
And
right?
He's bringing me out to play this festival that he's booking in Colorado.
Yeah.
He's involved in the business side of music already. Yeah. And, you know, he's always wanted to contribute to music. He just doesn't have any musicality.
Right.
So he's like, you know, you got the music, I got, you know, the fucking business.
And, yeah.
You know, I know about money.
Right.
I can handle money.
Right, right.
So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we so do let's it. Do that.
Yeah. He puts up like, man, like, I it's crazy to me how much Irreversible cost. It was like $1,500 or something like that. You
right,
know, like,
right, right.
Which was, you know, it seemed like so much then. I was like, oh shit.
Right, right.
You gonna give me $1,500?
Yeah.
And so he puts it down, we get it mixed and mastered, and then we press 1,000 copies. And all my homies were doing 500. So I,
you know, so
I
you did, were really doing it.
I did 1,000 copies, and it was crazy, man. And then I went on that tour with,
but how did you have a van already?
Because I'd been booking tours through MySpace with Type for fucking years before then.
Yeah.
So we would book.
What kind of shows were you guys playing? Like house parties?
Oh, yeah. Whatever we could get, man.
Yeah.
So I was using a station wagon. And yeah. So I actually rented a van for that tour because I didn't have a van at that point.
With Type?
No, for the Atmosphere one.
Oh,
I
just, okay.
I took every last dime that I had.
So you rented it?
Yeah.
So they were like, yo, you can come on tour if you can get us a van.
Yeah.
And so you rented a van.
I was like, fuck it, I'll rent the van.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, so you really put some skin in the fucking game. Like, you put your own money in.
It was my Hail Mary.
You risked it, yeah.
I risked it all. And I printed 10,000 demos of Irreversible that just had my 5 favorite songs off the record.
Because
I already knew that there's no way in hell I'm going to get people to buy my record.
So you just give it to them.
So I gave them 5 songs. Because I still want them to buy the record, but I don't want them to have it or else I'll never sell it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at that point, you know, renting the van.
Yeah.
We printed 1,000 records and then we did 10,000 demos.
So you have the 10,000 demos that they're just like in a clear plastic thing or something, and they're just like on a regular
case.
A shitty CD, like with no artwork on it.
Nope.
And it's that kind of shit that like people hand to you,
and you
at
throw
a show
it on the floor.
And it looks like a flyer, like, oh, here, I'll throw this away for you, sure.
But I didn't do that. I didn't stand by the door and be like, here.
You're at a
here.
Booth.
I would wear like a bright shirt on stage.
Yeah.
I'd wear something that was like, you clearly know it was me. Cause I've been on stage the whole entire night until Atmosphere came on. Cause I DJ for Grayskull and then I rapped during Mac Lethal's set.
Okay.
Which is part of the deal of them riding in the van.
Right.
Cause I got some shine on everyone's set if they're in the van.
Right.
So that was the deal.
Yeah.
And, so I would go out by the merch table and I would help Atmosphere's guys sell merch. And they're like, you are the DJ and you can fucking rap. I'm like,
So
I would talk to people.
Because that was the year they put out 1111 for Mac Lethal, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So I would talk to people and be like, yeah, you know what? Here's some free music. And they're like, what? So I met 10,000 people. I didn't stand outside and hand out 10,000 demos.
Well, and you're really, I mean, I've been on the road with you and I've played a bunch of shows with you.
Yeah.
You guys are fucking amazing at like, creating a rapport and talking to fans.
It's absolutely,
that's essential.
Until it's like a security risk for like other people,
right,
I will do that.
Right. And like, so that's something that you were learning at that point already, like, okay, I've got to fucking look this person in the eye and make sure that they want to go home and listen to this 5-song demo.
Yeah
That's great.
So I did that.
Yeah. And that Hail Mary kind of worked out, obviously, in the long
run. Dude, by the time we got off that tour, Irreversible was selling on iTunes.
Yeah.
We had already been, you know, we were getting requests to go on tours, other tours.
And yeah, who else was in you up?
Well, there was all the Living Legends stuff, and then there was, of course, the Mac Lethal thing, which I got involved in, which...
Can we kind of, like, briefly summarize what happened with that? Because you were signed to his label for a while, and if you don't want to, just say no.
I wasn't signed to anything, because it wasn't even a label.
Yeah.
It was really just a...
It was this idea that you guys probably had or something?
No, it was all Mac's thing. Yeah. And really what I think the idea was is if he could get a bunch of people together to do the shit that for him.
Yeah.
So really it was just kind of like a selfish circle jerk for Mac Lethal. Like it wasn't, there was no contracts. There was no nothing. None of us got paid for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to print my own records, pay for my own merch.
Yeah.
And by the time, you know, and then they would sell it on their store, but we never got a check back from that.
And I've noticed that's how a lot of like friend labels start, is like, oh yeah, yeah. Say you're on our label. And then it's like, okay, cool. Well, you know, here's the cost. And it's like, oh yeah, no, like you still got to cover that yourself. And it's like, fuck. Well, yeah, then why am I even putting this label on the back of
the
CD?
Exactly. And then they're like, well, you know, labels normally don't, they pay out quarterly. And it's like, yeah, I understand that, but labels also pay you to make these things.
Yeah.
I paid to make these things.
Yeah, yeah.
So just give me the money now.
Right, right.
Because
right.
It's not your money at all.
Right.
And so, but they never paid me anything. So they took all that money.
Yeah. Have you guys ever, I mean, I remember that because I was like heavy into like the scene at the time and reading all the gossip and shit. And I remember
it was all bullshit, man.
There was a lot of like you know, seemingly beef about like when you got signed to Rhymesayers off of Black Clover, like it was drama. Has all that been worked out and is it squashed or whatever?
No, I don't talk to that dude at all. I mean, that dude was like sending people to fucking fight me. He pulled some super ill shit with my girlfriend and like, so I don't talk to either one of them if you can figure that one out.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
Fuck him. Like whatever. Yeah. Like he was trying really hard to hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do it for years. He found the one thing. You win. And I hit him up and I was like, look, whatever. And he's like, you know, we're grown adults. Like, whatever happened between me, blah, 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 it's none of your business. I was like, what the fuck ever, man? Like,
yeah.
You tried, you found a way. So there you go. Now just fuck off. I don't want to talk to you again. Like,
right.
This is like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
You're just dead to me. So,
yeah, yeah.
So, yeah,
Well, that's a bummer, man. And that's I think that's like the toils of fucking business and friendship. Is sometimes it just goes awry.
I'm so fucking happy without that kind of like negative bullshit in my life, though. Because like always wondering about that situation, always stressing out about that situation was really hard on me because I was younger. I was really impressionable, which is why I was listening to that dude. And he knew that I was. So he took advantage of me, you know, and we had a little bit of money and we were working really hard and I squandered a lot of opportunities because of that, because I should have been looking at the rest of the world around me instead of trying to like win the good graces of that dude. I don't know. And this is, to be honest, this is the most honest I've ever talked about this in public. So,
well, and the thing is, I feel like I'm empathetic to that situation because I had something that went awry, obviously, a couple of years ago. And it is this kind of feeling like when it's happening, like, oh, it's like this feeling of starting over or something. Like you get a sick feeling in your stomach, like you're fucking, you know, your love of your life is breaking up with you or some shit. Or like, who's going to stay on my side about this, or who's going to take his side, that type of shit.
Man.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It feels like it can ruin you. Obviously it did not.
That's kind of how Rhymesayers came about. It had nothing to do with like him leaving and me being like, oh, I guess I'll just take your spot over there.
Right.
I mean,
that's what people were assuming because people are idiots.
Well, he fed him everything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He had that little forum and he would control.
Oh, right, right, right.
And yeah, the hip hop heads come to their own conclusions. And I stayed silent throughout the whole thing because,
as you should, because that's the fucking responsible thing to do.
High school lunchroom table bullshit.
Exactly.
Like, I made my decision and I'm comfortable with it. And I don't have to explain it to you because there is no explaining. Like, I already told you it's Rhymesayers now. So if you don't like it, then you can fuck off. But,
how did that come about?
It came about because I was in that feeling that you're talking about, that kind of just like a rock in my stomach. And
you don't want to leave the house, you know, like,
and
fucking.
I turned down a distribution deal with Black Clover, but they wanted me, Koch wanted me to sign something saying that the checks will go to Black Clover and then they will pay me out. And I was like, no. And Matt's like, I'm not fucking signing that. And so, you know, we walked away from that deal. And that's what, you know, they went nuts. Like, they lost their shit on us. That's when the whole uprise came. And I was like, well, shit, I just walked away from a distribution deal. The dude that I thought believed in me is, like, sending me death threats. You know, this is just all falling apart. Like, I don't know what to do. And so I reached out to a friend that, you know, just for some advice. And he patched me in with Sadiq. He's like, I don't actually really know about this stuff, but I do know someone that does. And so he gave me Sadiq's number and we started talking. And, you know, I was asking about like, well, is this something that I can tangibly do by myself? Cause I, you know, I know Jay Bird at this time and I've worked with these guys a lot. I had actually never really met Sadiq, so I wasn't familiar, but I knew that he was the dude over there. So we're talking and I'm just telling him kind of my frustrations. And like, I was kind of like, should I just stop? Is this kind of where I stop now? And, you know, he gave me a lot of feedback. And towards the end of it, he was just like, why don't I put your records out? And from that point, it's been Rhymesayers and it will stay that way. Because that dude, you know, he reached out to me in a time where it's like, that was going to be the end. And then showed me like a whole new light. And ever since then, they've been reinventing that light for me.
So really briefly, just tell me like, what's up with the new record? How did it come about? Like, what was the process?
You know, I wanted to tap into more organic side of production.
And You're handling this one all by yourself.
Yeah, well, it would be Lewis. Yeah. And Budo wanted to do kind of the opposite. He wanted to do more electronic stuff. And
yeah.
So we took the part. You know, we were like, all right, you know, we really sat down to make a song that turned into two albums and 3 years on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So neither one of us got to further the things that we were working on when we met each other.
Right.
It kind of, that all got stopped.
You guys were a couple of solo artists that kind of got involved with each other by
chance.
We were
going to do one song for 88 Keys, and it was Guinevere.
Yeah.
And it turned into all of 88 Keys.
Right.
So,
because you guys clicked organically and it worked, and it probably eventually just ran its course, and you realized like, okay, we need to like pursue our own endeavors again.
Yeah, and then the live shows happened, and Budo's like, I don't know what to do with live shows. And so we just kind of built that thing, and it just started happening. And when it ended, when the smoke settled from Together Apart, we were just kind of like, shit, we didn't get to do any of the things that we wanted to do. And so, you know, we're like, love you, let's just do some other shit.
Right.
So that's what we're doing.
And
it was great for me, man. I got to explore a side of music that I've been really kind of yearning for. And I only got a taste for it on this record, so I'm pretty hungry for more.
Right. What side of music is that?
It's really breaking down the music, opening it up more. Like, I didn't sample on Together Apart, but like, could have fooled you a couple times.
Yeah.
On this one, it's like working with a record producer. That brings in like string players and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Has been... It's just really where I want to go.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's amazing.
It was a good taste for me.
And how has it been feeling touring the record?
Great, good? Man.
The band's working out.
The band thing's working out. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Opening up the music on stage.
Yeah,
is great because I've been playing these songs for years.
Yeah.
So having the human error every night is nice because it's like, oh, you played that differently.
Right.
But I like that. Right. So I'm going to actually sing it differently.
You get to learn more about the songs that you've already written.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
great.
And
you get a time together, you know, because you can walk down to a note or walk up or change chords to be. So you can blend songs that, you know, a DJ just can't do.
Yep.
So it's, I don't know, it's cool.
That's dope, man. How much longer are you on the road for this run? Forever?
Till like August something.
So this year is pretty much fucking...
August 9th.
This year is pretty much
a wrap for you. Getting it all out of the way up front.
And then what? You going to just go back in the studio?
Then I'm going to go find Karen. I'll get
That's a perfect fucking segue to end it. Tell the people where to find you online so that Karen, if you can hear this, hit him on Twitter at...
At Greaves Music.
G-R-E-G-R-I-E.
I before E player.
Yeah, I before E, except after C.
Yeah. So Greaves Music, same thing with Facebook, Greaves Music.
Yeah,
you hit me on the Instagram, just Greaves.
Slide in those DMs with a dick pic, no big deal.
Hit me up with those dick pics, please. Yeah, I will accept those.
Yeah.
Snapchat is dickpic@snapchat.com.
Dot Greaves. Thank you so much for doing this. You know, this is our first mobile one. It was a lot of fun. We're out here.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out.
In a steamy green room. Yeah, it was like last minute. We weren't able to do it in the studio. And thank God that Greaves is a... complete and utter tech nerd and just had, he's like, oh yeah, I have shotgun mics and a reason fucking setup. I have everything that you need. I'm like, well, fuck yeah, dude. Mobile studio, holler.
It's the first time I've got to use my mobile studio. So,
so it's great.
Just popped its cherry.
Hell yeah. I could taste it that it was just getting popped. Innate sense.
We
for
should leave
things.
A dent in the wall like Karen did the Golden Meadows sign.
So every time you come back to the Roxy, every time you come back to the Roxy green room, you know that this is where I gave you a hand job with your reason setup. But yeah, man, I'll let you get the sound check. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate it. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you can follow me at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery on Greaves's setup at IM Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. Where unfortunately there will be no Greaves performance today, but maybe next time when you're in LA and you don't have as much to do, we will do that. And then, so youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. Everything wrapped up in a pretty package, kindaneat.net. I'm Lee. That was Ben.
Hey, hey.
Greaves. And this was kind of neat.
Yeah.